We should create ways by which, in our digital age, we forget, we reduce the total amount of information that we have available.
Some memories you might want to hold on to forever. Like the time you and the cast of Melrose Place played Strip Battleship at Heather Locklear's super secret Oscar after party. Other memories you only want to forget. Like that time Ashley Simpson sunk your battleship and let the paparazzi snap photos of you in your skivvies as you ran home weeping. In the digital age, traces of all those memories, bad, good, or relevant, exist somewhere out there, just waiting for you to rediscover them. From those crazy office Christmas party photos on your Facebook wall, to your recent Google searches, to that email draft you thought you deleted in which you blackmail your boss for a raise using those crazy Christmas party photos. Phew, thank goodness it was only a draft. There are those who might argue that there's value in keeping all these digital traces around. You remember that old mantra that those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it? Well, if you can never reference back to those old text, photos, or videos, you might be putting yourself in danger of forgetting valuable lessons. But what if all these uncurated digital memories actually pose a different kind of danger? There's abundant evidence to suggest that all these photos, emails, and texts could come back to haunt us in the real world. But could there also be evidence that these old trunks of memories actually inhibit some innate need for clean slates, clear thinking, and simply using your brain? Could there actually be a virtue to forgetting in the digital age? Well, in fact, the virtue of forgetting in the digital age is the subtitle and premise for Victor Mayer Schoenberger's new book called Delete. He spoke with David Weinberger to argue for an expiration date on our digital memories.
For all of human history, humans have forgotten most of what they experience every day, the events that they go through, the thoughts that they have, and remembered only a very small subset of that because it takes time and effort to remember. And so we use it sparingly for those things that are worth remembering. That has been true for millennia. Even film, photography, print didn't change much of that basic equation. But the digital tools that we now have available make it much easier to remember and much harder to forget. In fact, remembering has become the default and forgetting the exception, very much unlike it was in the analog days.
Recording may be the norm now, the default. But I certainly don't remember more than I used to. I can find more if I want.
That's right.
But I actually don't remember. I remember less and less as time goes on.
That's right, because your human memory didn't get an upgrade. Your digital memory got an upgrade. And it's not just the capacity of the digital memory that increased through better retrieval software and so forth. We are capable of pinpointing and retrieving information better than we were in the very sequential analog days. Now, you might ask yourself, why is that a problem? Isn't it good to remember? Isn't that a bug of the biological system that we call human beings? What is in it? What is the positive? What is the value of forgetting? Forgetting helps us to evolve, to change, to let memories fade that are not relevant anymore to what is going on today. The human mind does that pretty much automatically. We depreciate events that have no relevance anymore. That's what cognitive psychologists say is the reconstructive element of the mind. And digital tools and that we have...
One of the ways that we remember things is to go back to recordings. We do that now. We go through the photo album. We look things up in a book and remember that way. The human brain function isn't changing. The human function of remembering and forgetting hasn't changed. Why not instead say, well, what we have now is so many more recordings that we can choose better than we ever could, what it is we want to remember, what it is we want to know. We can go back and see the archive if we want to.
That would be wonderful. The world that you describe would be wonderful, except it's not close to reality. The reality is that there is a strong bias in favor of recording everything and making accessible everything and making it relatively hard and complex and costly to forget, that is to delete stuff. All that I am advocating for is to reverse that again so that the default is forgetting is deleting over time, and the exception to the rule is remembering. a lot of times people have labeled my suggestion as providing expiry dates or expiration dates for information. That's a shorthand of saying we should create ways by which in our digital age we forget, we reduce the total amount of information that we have available. Let me give you a hypothetical case. Suppose Jane is sitting in front of her computer, an email comes in from John, a good old friend of hers. She sees him once a year. He's coming into town, they want to meet. She is excited, happy to see him again. They have a lot to catch up. She is looking at her emails that she sent to John in her mailbox just to see where they met last time to suggest the same location. And as she's doing that, you know, dozens and dozens of email pop up as they do when we use our mailbox search function. And she just goes through them, browses through them, and suddenly a subject line, you know, catches her eye, and she looks at the email in more detail, and she reads about a fight that she had and a quarrel that she had with John, and there's words about deception and betrayal. And she's reading on, and she's reading about a fight that 8 years ago happened between John and her. And then there is nothing. And then a couple of months or years later, there is another email, and they seem to kind of have mended it. But that fight, that struggle, is right back in her mind at that moment because of that external stimulus. That's how we remember. And she viscerally remembers the feelings, the hurt feelings that she had at that time 8 years ago. And suddenly she questions herself and says, do I really want to have coffee with that guy that betrayed me 8 years ago? Do I really want to do that? And she suddenly is questioning her relationship to John. Nothing happened in this 5 minutes. John didn't change. All that happened was through an external stimulus caused by comprehensive digital memory. Jane was reminded of a very troubling situation. The problem is that humans, because we biologically forget, have a great difficulty of putting in a timely perspective events that they remember from their past.
And suppose Jane comes across a series of letters from 8 years ago in which she expresses greater affection for John and had forgotten that she actually once really cared about this person.
Right. Same problem.
And that's a problem because...
because actually those things don't have any relevance for the present.
Why doesn't something that I've forgotten... So I look through a photo album and I remember now. Oh, I forgot that whatever. My kid had this toy or we went to that place and I'm suffused with happiness or anger or shame or whatever it is. Why is that a bad thing to be doing? I don't understand that.
It's not a bad thing to be doing. It's a confusing thing to be doing.
It's the opposite of confusing.
No, actually not. Cognitive psychologists tell us it is confusing.
So does the same thing hold for our family photo albums? Should we be getting rid of those after 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it is?
No, because we tend to put into photo albums those things and events that play an important role in our lives. By the way, we also... deliberately choose to go to a photo album and look at things if we want to be reminded of something.
One could also say that photo albums are very careful constructions that are in which we build a past that reflects our current narrative for who we are and who our family is. So we put in the family trips. We don't take pictures of the quotidian and so forth, or the fights, right?
Exactly.
So that is a constructed narrative.
Yes.
That is perhaps deceptive, perhaps pathological, if in fact I'm constructing an album that at the time I don't want to think about the ways in which my parents were not nice to me, whatever. There's an element of fiction in the constructed stuff, the carefully constructed stuff as well. Why couldn't the stuff that has expired, in fact, turn out to be revelatory, truthful, affect us in positive and real ways?
A lot of what we experience and have experienced in our past might be revealing today as well, but we forgot about it. The filter that our mind has in remembering or forgetting things is linked to our appeal, our need as human beings to align our past, you used the word reconstruct, align our past with the present. And so every memory that we have is carefully by our mind unconsciously being reconstructed and reconstructed and reconstructed all the time. That's how we make sense of the past, but also that's how we keep acting in the present. It is much harder for us as human beings to do so if we have a very distinct set of externalized memories in digital storage that then cause a misalignment.
Similar sort of objections are made, I think quite reasonably, as yours are, to this accumulation of everything everywhere, publicly available all the time, along the lines of privacy, not along memory, but in the present, privacy issues. I can now see your drunken Facebook photos and so forth. In the realm of privacy, I think one of the responses to I can see all your embarrassing photos that you want is, well, okay, yes, that's true. And so we always govern what we're allowed to pay attention to through norms. We do that walking down the street now, which things we're allowed to overhear and so forth. So one of the answers to the privacy question is, well, we have, as a culture, we have to, and maybe we are learning something like either call it selective ignoring or call it forgiveness.
Right.
You know, we're all going to have drunken Facebook photos. Why not instead talk not about deletion, because there are other benefits to having this stuff, but instead talk about norms of forgiveness and selective attention?
That's a very good point. In my book, I go through that exact proposal. I call it the cognitive adjustment proposal. That is a proposal to basically adjust the way by which we decide and we evaluate things and take into account that things that have happened a long time in the past are not that important anymore. That cognitive adjustment would be wonderful. I think I would be all in favor of it, except that the cognitive psychologists tell us that this cognitive adjustment is going to be incredibly hard for us to do. And so if we don't have that cognitive adjustment available anytime soon, we need some band-aid measure, for a better word, to work through a transition period. And the transition period could be a couple of hundred years, a couple of thousand years, I don't know. Changing the way people think and decide, that's a harder part. You know, you can't mandate that through a law. The law can say, we expunge a criminal record, we delete DNA information, these type of things. These are information ecology norms, and that's another approach that helps on a societal level, but that doesn't help on an individual level.
So how many years back does your email archive go?
About a good 14 years, I think.
Is that a rolling thing? Are you going to...
No, not at all. In fact, when I moved at the end of 1998 from Austria to take up my position at Harvard, I brought my email mailbox with me. But through a problem, I switched from PCs to Macs. I couldn't read the mailbox anymore. And so I lost my entire memory. I was frightened. I was horrified. It actually didn't do a diddly.
So are you now consciously limiting your archive to 14 years or?
No, because that is very hard to, it's not trivial to build into Entourage or Outlook. I wish we had applications that would make that easier.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Victor Mayer Schoenberger teaches at the National University of Singapore and is the author of the recently released Delete, The Virtue of Forgetting in the Digital Age. He can be found on the web at www.vmsweb.net. You can find out more about Victor, including his recent talk at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society, at the Radio Berkman website at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. This week's episode was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, along with David Weinberger at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge.